from New Orleans. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. This week, an appreciation and an update. We'll hear about the piano player who's left such an imprint on people's lives that fans rebuilt his house 30 years after he died. If you love music, you need to know about Henry Rowland Byrd. And if you love Louisiana music, you already know that Henry Rowland Byrd is Professor Longhair.
My name is Patricia. Everybody know me with my father's legacy as Pat Byrd.
My dad was my best friend, okay? Dad was my best friend.
Turns out, he was a friend to us all. Dr. Professor Longhair and the people who knew him. After the break. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. The song, How Long Has That Train Been Gone, is about memories of good times and bad. It's about love and loss and lust and hope when there probably is no hope. But the most important thing about How Long Has That Train Been Gone is that Professor Longhair is playing.
How long has the train been gone? Since my baby been gone.
There's been plenty said about Longhair over the years by some of the most eloquent people around. But to put it simply, Henry Rowland Byrd, born in Bogalusa, Louisiana in 1918, is the father of modern New Orleans music. His disciples include such greats as Fats Domino, Alan Toussaint, James Booker, Dr. John, John Cleary, Devel Crawford, Tom Morell, Tom McDermott, and any number of people who don't play piano at all.
How long do I have to wait for you? Tell me how long do I have to wait for you? I'm so doggone lonesome. Yes, I'm lonesome and I'm blue.
This show is about how the presence of a single individual who died in 1980 can still be felt over a music program born more than 30 years later. Professor Longhair, whose friends call him Fess, figures into the very first answer from the very first guest on the very first Music Inside Out. Bandleader David Torkanowski is the son of a symphony conductor. He says he can tell the difference between a classically trained pianist and a piano player.
Level of proficiency, fluency, precision. You know, now some of the best people that sit behind a piano are piano players. You know, Fess was a piano player.
Professor Longhair.
Yeah, even though his execution was flawless.
So by that definition, here's what a piano player can do. That's Professor Longhair with Mess Around. And when Torkanowski describes the difference between a blue note and a grace note, he walks us right back to Longhair.
Blue note, you can use a grace note as a blue note, like. But the technical blue note is that note which fights the harmony or tears against the harmony. Here's a G7 chord. And here's a blue note. So it can be a note on the blues scale, usually the third or the flat five or the seven. But because it tears against the harmony, it gets your attention right away.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Hailey Jackson knew the power of that.
A grace note is in classical music. It's a note that's preceded by its immediate neighbor, either upper or lower, and the preceding note is of much shorter duration and usually less softer than the antecedent note. Like, here's the note. The grace note would be, or in real time, it's an on-purpose flam of two adjacent notes. And in New Orleans piano, that's used a lot. Professor Longhair made that part of the music.
Professor Longhair and the great Earl King on Big Chief. Like most people, Professor Longhair's life was filled with metaphorical grace notes and blue notes. Hat Walton must have been a grace note. She's the youngest of Longhair's children, born under her mother's maiden name. But later, she switched to calling herself Pat Bird. And if your dad was Henry Roland Bird, wouldn't you? The family's duplex is on Terpsichore Street in New Orleans. When we first ran this show in 2012, the house was a sad sight, one of those Katrina rebuilding nightmares. But a multi-agency effort has transformed the place with the help of volunteers from across the nation. A bottom quarter of the house is now designated a Professor Longhair Museum. There's room for Pat Bird and her son to live in another area. And on the second floor, there's an apartment for rent. that apartment might turn out to be the most sought-after address in town. It's the New Orleans equivalent of moving into Graceland. The house on Terpsichore Street is no mansion, but it was a significant step up in the world for Longhair. Before he and his family settled there, they had moved in and out of six different rentals along South Rampart Street. In fact, they were living on South Rampart in the spring of 1971 when Longhair played the first New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival. Pat Bird has a terrific memory.
It started, the jazz festival started at the Municipal Auditorium, I think now it's the Louis Armstrong Park. And the festival, I think, was starting in April. So what he did, we used to have pawn shop. Everything was right there. $20 to rent you a suit. He went and he got a suit, a black suit with a white shirt, black tie, and the shoes. And he and I walked from 1522 South Rampart Street to the Louis Armstrong Park. I'd never seen my father play. I'd never heard him play, other than around the house, which was just keeping in touch with his music. His worst concern, I think, was, I've got to leave her out here to go on the stage. So he got some of the staff to monitor me inside the barricades. So nevertheless, to see my father go on the stage, and I mean, you got about five or six stages set up, you know, you got like a handful of people in front of the stage and you blink your eyes and you look around and you can't see dirt, you can't see the ground. Fess is back.
There were so many people.
Oh gosh, it was coming from near and far. I couldn't even see beyond the barricade. And I remember he used to go and clean up Joe Santos' record shop, One Stop Record Shop. There was a little restaurant across the street. I loved the hamburgers. That was my treat for doing good and being good. So as we were getting ready to leave, he was soaking wet. My father would play till he was drenched in water, okay? And we're walking back and he says, well, Patricia, he says, I got a surprise for you. And I'm like, what, Bird, what? He says, we're gonna make a stop. We stopped at that restaurant and we got my hamburger platter and my drink. And he said, all right, now you gotta be good. I'm about 10, 12 years old. My dad was my best friend, okay? Dad was my best friend.
Tell me about that first time when he was on stage and you heard him play.
I was outdone. I mean, I was speechless. I heard him like on Thanksgiving and Christmas in our old houses for entertainment. He would get out the bed after he ate his dinner and he'll strike up a few keys, but this is just family. But to see the effects of the love that he had in his music, and from what I understand, this my dad's career was very popular back in the 40s. To see this with my own eyes, I've heard about it. You know, he and my mom would talk, and he would meet guys on the street that would tell him, Fess, don't give up. You know, God is good. And he'd always say, I know God didn't bring me this far to leave me. He said, I have one more step to make.
Professor Longhair's daughter, Pat Bird, talking about her father's appearance at the first New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival. From then on, for the rest of his life, Longhair closed out the festival.
I got a whole lot of love for you. I got a whole lot of, ooh, ooh, ooh. without a lot of love.
That's a whole lot of loving from Professor Longhair. More from his daughter, Pat Bird, coming up after the break. Stay with us. It's Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Professor Longhair.
I imagine you could just about see every youngster in New Orleans that came by me in some form or fashion to either look, listen, or show them something. And, well, I can go back as far as Sugar Boy and Eddie Bo and Guitar Slim. Well, I've worked with so many youngsters, Larry Williams. There's as many youngsters as you can call their names in New Orleans. I just can't just sit down right now and call all of them. But Mac, well, y'all call him Dr. John. Mac Rubberneck is really his name. All those kids used to stand around the door, Papoose, Lalaw, and Fats and all of them. It was very small. I was around the Caledonia's Inn. They were so small, they had to stand outside and do the same thing that I was doing when I was learning from Toots Washington. I couldn't go in the joints because they had alcohol in there, you know.
Professor Longhair in a 1979 interview for Canadian radio. Bassist Reggie Scanlon has had a long career in music. He's played with James Booker and Boogie Bill Webb, the Radiators, and now the New Orleans Suspects. But the subject Scanlon seems to feel most strongly about was his time playing with Professor Longhair. In the mid-1970s, Longhair plucked a young Scanlon off the Chitlin circuit in California and changed his life.
So I was with him for about a year. And he was, I have to say, he was an absolute prince. He was one of the nicest gentlemen you could ever work with or be around. He was great to his friends. I mean, he had people staying at his house, you know, friends that couldn't afford to stay other places. And, you know, I mean, he was a very generous and great human being. He's what everybody should aspire to. And his plan, I mean, I always felt like kind of a kid brother on a date, you know, because I could never figure out what he needed a bass player for. His left hand was so heavy that it was all I could do just to, like, keep up with him. And he was a funny guy, too, you know. But he just had a super heavy left hand that, I mean, you just needed to nail what he was doing.
If you got a woman and she don't understand, you don't have to feed her a dog, give her to another man, cause her mind is gone. It ain't no doubt about it, boy, her mind is gone. When a woman starts doing wrong, she won't do right no more.
You know, and he was, and plus, his stuff was so precise. I mean, it was really, there wasn't a lot of room to, like, fudge on where the note was going to fall. You had to be right on it with him.
Well, I told you once, if I told you twice, you better take heed to my advice. Shucking and jiving and telling lies, you're going to find yourself outside now, baby. What you gonna do? I'm getting sick and tired of fooling around with you.
And he was also great because he wasn't one of these kind of guys that if you made a mistake, you know, all of a sudden it was on the news at 5 o'clock, you know. You know.
He wouldn't punch you on the bandstand. He wouldn't.
No, he just gave you this little look like, you know, and I was like, don't do that anymore. Okay. But he gave you the latitude to try stuff. Because he told me one time, he said, I forget what it was. And he was like, I like that. He said, I like strange sounds. I said, okay, well, if that works, you know. So he gave you the leeway to try things out. But if it didn't work out, I mean, he, you know, it wasn't a big deal. It's just like, hey, you know, let's pass on that one, you know. Where other guys would be like, stopping the show, you know.
Yeah, if it were James Brown, he'd be stopping the show, or
Sonnyland
Charlie
Slim.
Mingus. Sonnyland Slim did that too.
Oh man, he was the prince of that. You know, and Lightnin' Hopkins was, but Sonnyland Slim was not too far behind. Lightnin' Hopkins would make a 15-minute issue out of it, and then fire you on the stage. You know.
Call you all out of your name, as they
say.
Oh,
yeah, he'd call you out. He'd make you listen to the whole thing, and then he'd fire you.
Oh,
so, like, you could, you know, you never just, like, would go, until you got, I mean, I guess some of these guys got hip to it. As soon as they got called out, they'd leave, because,
yeah, it wasn't going anywhere good.
It was going to end bad anyway, so may as well get it over with.
Well, so why do you suppose a guy that as talented as Professor Longhair was, why didn't he do better on the national stage?
You know, I think part of it was people weren't quite ready for it. I think he just kind of missed the boat on people becoming aware of really what he was all about and what he was doing on the piano, because he really was kind of the fountainhead for all of this stuff. I mean, even now, in some way, people might say I'm exaggerating, but I can tell you, even now, you feel his loss. You know, it's almost like there's never been anybody who has come along to fill the space that he filled. He really was the head of this thing. And his playing, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that can play like him and study him and all this kind of stuff. But, I mean, those ideas came from him. And he was just a very unique musician and individual. And like I said, I mean, he is, you know, he'd be very hard to replace. You know?
So when you were on stage with him, can you think of any songs in particular that you all used to play together when you knew things were going really well and he was having a great time?
You know, usually, I can't speak for him, But for me, I mean, every time we play Tipitina, to me would be like, man, I felt like James Cagney, top of the world. You know, I was like, this is like the ultimate. He had a guy playing drums with him in the band who was from Canada, he really wasn't a very good drummer as far as New Orleans. I mean, he might have been okay rock and roll drummer, but as far as New Orleans stuff, he was really not hitting on it. And every time Dr. John would be around, he was always trying to angle and get into his band and stuff. And finally one day, I goes, I don't know if he's trying to get in my band for you, or playing with the best guy in the world. I mean, the guy really just was, you know, I can't say enough good stuff about him. I mean, he was my grad school. He was, you know, he was a super cool guy to hang out with. He was funny. He was, you know, just everything positive you could think about somebody. That was fast.
Bassist Reggie Scanlon.
The 1970s was also a coming-of-age story. When her father's touring career picked up, so did the family's fortunes. Then, on August 19th, 1975, Longhair did what most men with good prospects do. He got married. Henry Roland Byrd and Alice Walton married at home on South Rampart Street. They'd been sweethearts in the 1940s and together continuously since 1958. Pat was at the wedding.
Girl, it was the kicksest day to see my mom and my daddy kiss. You don't do this. Y'all old. But it was August the 19th. A minister by the name of Oliver Bonador, who has christened all of the kids. He's done the services for our relatives that was deceased, passed on. They were excited to see that my dad was ready and prepared and financially stable to do this. He got up and he put on his suit, and oh, he walked around the house, and they both was excited. My mom, looking at her face, is like, well, she had been married before, but you know, to marry the man you love made the difference. I probably was in the back of the room cracking jokes, okay, 'cause that's what I do. I remember when they said you could kiss your bride. She was short, he was tall, he had to bend down. And I'm like, he looked at me, right? He didn't really say anything, but they both was happy. You would have had to see the joy in their eyes. It's like you marry a childhood sweetheart. A date, you know, Cinderella and her prince.
Soda, dash the coupe Chevrolet. Oh, give me the crack of the new daddy he got. Ooh la la. I'm gonna call this little girl one time. You don't mind. Hey, little girl. Gee, you sure look fine.
Nearly 4 years later, Longhair bought the family house on Terpsichore Street.
Oh, gosh. He just couldn't wait to put my mother in the house. And it's more of like, when we first started, I couldn't do this. But you were patient with me, you loved me, you believed in me. And now it's my time to provide for you as a man. And even though our kids are grown, this is where our life actually starts. In our first home, he was very appreciative, and as I said, spiritually, he knew that God had blessed him. His career picks up again. Things he could never do in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, the 70s became his best years. To see him a lot during the time when he bought the house in 79, it was like Genie or Houdini. You see him in the kitchen one minute and you hear him saying, well, Alice, I gotta go, I have to go meet this one, or I have to go over here.
Fess was back. After years of disappointment, he was finally in demand, touring occasionally, playing house parties and clubs around New Orleans. And when the 501 Club folded, Longhair had a new musical home base, a club called Tipitina's, created by 14 true believers in his genius. This is Music Inside Out, and we're talking about our favorite little old lovin' man.
Well, all the boys call me Dr. Professor Longhair. The girls all call me a little old lovin' man. All the boys call me Dr. Professor Longhair, but the girls all call me a little old lovin' man. Doctor, baby, then they know I'll give a helping hand. Well, you know I know I'm not a doctor, baby, but I wouldn't advise you to try to prove I'm not a doctor's son. Yes, you know I'm not a doctor, baby, but I wouldn't advise you to try to prove I'm not a doctor's son. Stay right here. That is until the doctor comes. Well, hurry down, I'm office, darling. I'm open from midnight until the break of day. All of you girls, hurry down to my office in the morning. Baby, I'm open from midnight until the break of day. You know I don't care what's hurting you, honey. Little girl, I know I can drive your pains away. Well, ask anybody, honey, and I do meet in your own neighborhood. Yes, ask anybody, darling, little girl in your own neighborhood. And I guarantee they'll tell you if I can't cure you, sugar, I bet your family doctor won't do you no good. That's why they call me Dr. Professor Longhair. That's why the girls call me a little loving man. That's why they call me Dr. Professor Longhair. That's why the girls call me a little loving man. I'm a heart regulator. I've got the rhythm tracked in my head.
Coming up, when your baby leaves you all alone. Stay tuned. It's Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. We've had all kinds of guests on the program this year, and the name that most consistently comes up in our interviews is Professor Longhair. That's why we're talking about him today. Longhair won a posthumous Grammy Award and is a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But during his lifetime, he missed more than he hit. Longhair's best appearance on the national charts was in 1950 with the song Baldhead.
Look at that, she ain't got no hair. Will you look at that? Show me this girl there. Whoa, look at her. I don't see no hair. Whoa, look at that. Where's this girl at?
But like so many artists before and since, Longhair proved that commercial success is not the only kind of success there is. Henry Rowland Byrd's talent for melding calypso rhythms, rumbas, and mambos with a witty take on the blues helped define New Orleans R&B. He may not have reached the top of the charts, but Professor Longhair helped plenty of other people get there. Ladies and gentlemen, Alan Toussaint.
It was very exciting to me to hear Professor Longhair. And throughout my childhood, whenever there was a Fest record nearby, don't care how far it was, I would find it and learn it. And I just idolized him. So it was always a pleasure and quite a lesson and a milestone to hear one of Fest's new records.
That's producer, arranger, and composer Alan Toussaint, appearing in the 1982 documentary Piano Players Rarely Ever Play Together. And more than 30 years later, Toussaint tells Music Inside Out virtually the same thing.
I am a disciple of Professor Longhair. Yes, Professor Longhair and then the rest of us.
After Katrina, Toussaint and Elvis Costello released a song called Ascension Day, a variation on the Longhair classic melody, Tipitina. Here he is playing an instrumental version. And if you don't hear love in this song, then maybe you don't know what love is.
That is the beginning of that song. And later on in the song, we get to, which is actually Tip It In.
Alan Toussaint's a swell musician.
Professor Longhair and Alan Toussaint. Their conversation spans a lifetime. Professor Longhair's daughter, Pat Bird, had a series of calamities following Katrina, which is probably the best reason why the Tipitinas Foundation, Project Homecoming, and the United Way have made such a priority of getting her back to Terpsichore Street. Many of her possessions are gone. Sitting under the oaks in Audubon Park, I asked if she has any of her father's music.
I may have a couple of albums. But I can't even say that because I lost the house I was renting last year and I had to put them by people, and it's a long story with that, but if it's not there, it's okay.
Well, so do you have any particular favorites? I mean, do you...
Oh, I love Crawfish Fiesta. I have one record that I love. When Your Baby Leave.
When Your Baby Leave.
When Your Baby Leave. I love all of his music, but I find myself when I'm in a spirit and I want to sing something of him, even when I'm talking with other people I'm affiliated with, you know, we'll be talking about the part. I say, yeah, I might even get up there and I might sing. I said, what you gonna sing? I said, When Your Baby Leave. I'm serious, I love it. I just used to love to hear him sing it. I sung in my church choir for like 22 years. As a matter of fact, I was singing it about 2 weeks ago and waiting at the bus stop, and a gentleman looked. He said, you used to sing in the choir? I said, yeah. He said, I could tell. But I just love that.
I don't even remember that song. What is it?
There you go. There you go. When Your Baby leave you all alone. I'm not, you know, don't get me wrong. Let me see if I could sing you a couple of lyrics. When your baby leave you all alone, and nobody, that's the part I like, calls you on the phone. Well, don't you feel like crying? Don't you feel like crying? Here I am, baby. Come on, come on, cry to me. Oh, when you walk alone in an empty room and there's nothing there but the scent of a perfume. That's enough.
Now I know what song you're talking about.
I love that song.
That it's Cry to Me.
Yeah.
That's the official name.
Right, that's the official. Well, he rewrote it several times. First it was When Your Baby Leave. Then he came back, I think, the last time before he did Crawfish Fiesta, he says Cry to Me.
When your baby leave you all alone.
I liked the Crawfish Fiesta album, maybe because it came out during the time of our weakest sorrows, you know, the same week he died. He worked very hard on that album. God bestowed something in him. I've seen in other musicians and artists, but I tell you, music was his soul. I just pray that people would just realize the gifts, not just the musicians, but any talent or gift that God bestows on one that they share with you, just appreciate it. It's not gonna last forever.
If your love don't return, don't you feel like a
That's Pat Bird, the youngest child of Professor Longhair, speaking with us here in New Orleans. Project Homecoming, the Tipitinas Foundation, and the United Way have rebuilt Longhair's house on Terpsichore Street, and Pat Bird plans to move in by Mardi Gras Day. And you've been listening to Music Inside Out. Our show is produced by Lynette Johnson, Sean Collins, Lily Kieber, Margaret Howes, and Jason Ryan. Music Inside Out is produced in partnership with WWNO. To hear this show again, or to see what Professor Longhair's house looks like now, go to our website at musicinsideout.org. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out.
Music Inside Out is underwritten by the Historic New Orleans Collection, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, Adam Newman Studio, and WWNO. Donations to Music Inside Out are tax deductible, thanks to our partnership with the National Performance Network. For more information on how you can support our program, go to our website at musicinsideout.org/support.
This week, the last word goes to me. Leaving Terpsichore Street the other day, I asked a teenager on a bicycle what he thought about Professor Longhair's music. "I wouldn't know about that," he said. "That's from my grandmother's time." So if you happen to be anywhere near Terpsichore Street right now, turn up your radio, because we've got some more Professor Longhair for that kid and his grandmother and for music lovers around the world. This song's for you.
If I had a known you had company, darling, you know I would have had Wheaties for my lunch. If I had a known you had company, baby, girl, I would have had Wheaties for my lunch. Oh, the man was twice my size, and I do believe he was packing a Joe Louis punch. For letting the big times come between our happiness. It's my fault. For letting the big times come between our happiness. Oh, I realize now I could have stayed home with you and the children, baby. Well, I could have avoided all this mess.
started all this mess.
Working with a good man like Dave Bartholomew, that was the very first band that I set in with. And they was on intermission. Some of the boys asked me and said, why don't you play a piece? At that time, I was Henry, all long hair, no professor. And I did. So the proprietor, which was Mr. Mike Chesterton, he wanted to know what's going on. And he said, long hair's playing the piano. You know, that's what they know everybody in subconscious. His name is Henry, you know. And he stood up there for a while, and the house got crowded. Nobody worried about David Band coming back anymore, you know. And so after that, from then on, every chance Dave got, he gave me work, you know, in his band. And I got so I'd do it. So I said, I'm going to build me a band, you know. And Mike got impressed. The people was adoring it and coming in like mad, you know, drinking and buying drinks and tipping us on the bandstand, little kiddies and things we had on the bandstand then, you know. So Mike come down and said, he do that all the time. He said, man, you're knocking them out. Long hair. He said, by the way, he said, where you get the long hair name from? I said, oh, people just call me that because they don't know my real name. He said, no, we don't want that. From now on, you are the professor.